The first presidential debate is set for tomorrow night, but today, the nation is finally learning what's in the president's tax returns. Good Monday morning. We're live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Just ahead, a closer look at the president's tax information. And the final days of the presidential campaign here in critical swing state Florida, as we speak with Mike Madrid of the Lincoln Project. Get on the line now. Join us. It's 549-2937. Then later, we'll tell you why local doctors are sounding the alarm about the full reopening of the state this week. Speaking of which, here is the latest on the coronavirus pandemic. On Sunday, Florida surpassed 700,000 confirmed cases of COVID-19, according to the Department of Health report. There are now 14,032 deaths from COVID here in Florida. And we are very sad to tell you that one death over the weekend that we'd like to acknowledge is that of a 12-year-old Duval County girl, a middle school student in Atlantic Beach, Mayport area. She is the youngest COVID-19 victim ever reported in Duval County. Well, as these grim pandemic numbers continue, last night, the New York Times dropped some bombshell information. They published decades of President Donald Trump's tax returns. Now, among the key findings, Trump paid no federal income taxes in 11 of the 18 years the Times examined. In 2017, after he became president, his tax bill was only $750. The president used questionable measures to reduce his tax burden, including a $72 million tax refund that is the subject of an audit by the IRS right now. Also, the president owes more than $400 million in loans that he is personally responsible for and that will come due in the next few years. Mr. Trump has long refused to release his tax return information. It makes him the first president in decades to hide basic details about his finances. His refusal had made his tax returns among the most sought-after documents in recent memory. Now, though, all the information is out there, just as Trump meets Joe Biden this week on a debate stage in Cleveland. What's been notable about this election cycle is the proliferation of Republican groups who have been working for some time now to call attention to not only the president's finances, but also many other issues of concern to the voters. Mike Madrid is a co-founder and political director of the Lincoln Project, a group of prominent Republicans from around the nation who are working to defeat President Trump, and he's on the line. Mike Madrid, good morning.
Good morning to you. Thank you so much for having me.
Good to have you. What are your questions for Mike Madrid of the Lincoln Project? It's 549-2937. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. Mike, in a moment, I'm curious to hear about the Lincoln Project's work, but first I must get your reaction to this bombshell story in the New York Times, which I encourage everyone to read. They have published nearly two decades worth of the president's tax return information, and there are a lot of eye-popping pieces of data in there, but the biggest is that the president has paid little to no taxes for many years. What's your reaction?
Well, like so many things over the past few years, I think we're all shocked, a little jaw-dropping news here, but nobody's really surprised. I think we're just continually reminded of the fact that these types of things are very commonplace with the president of the United States. And we're going to have to see how the average person reacts when they recognize that the president of the United States, who whether he claims to be a billionaire, pays no 11 out of 18 years in taxes. It's a little mind-numbing. But like I said, as Americans, I think we've come to terms with the fact that these types of unfortunate developments are just what we can expect with this president.
You are a pollster and a political director of the Lincoln Project. It's a Republican group that has been seeking to defeat the president. It's one of many Republican-affiliated groups that has sprung up during the Trump presidency, like the group Republican Voters Against Trump, Republicans and Independents for Biden, a group called Repair, which is a Republican reform group founded by former Department of Homeland Security official Miles Taylor. You're a Republican and you work with Republicans who have deep experience in Republican campaigns. One of your colleagues is Rick Wilson of Tallahassee, who's appeared on this program. Why are so many Republicans like yourself speaking out against this president? I can't recall an election like this in the past where people of one party are denouncing the standard bearer of their own party.
That's a really good question. I think it's kind of a sign of not only of the times here, but again of this president. What we are seeing is a historic breakaway of Republicans and conservative-leaning independents who believe that the president of the United States presents a clear threat to the republic. It's not really about being a Republican or a Democrat anymore for most of us. It's not a debate about tax policy or foreign policy or different ideological issues. It's that the president is literally undermining the basic institutions of American governance. And at that moment, you have to answer the call to your American role, or all of our roles as citizens. And I'm proud of how many of us have finally had the courage to stand up and say, this is a danger. This is a trampling on our constitutional rights. This is an undermining of the norms which have built this great country. And we stand on the precipice of losing so much of what 244 years of history has brought us if we continue down the path of supporting a man who really represents authoritarian tendencies and does not have much respect for constitutional rights and has sought foreign influence to help preserve his hold on power. And so we're at a very dangerous, dark moment in American history, and it's why so many of his closest advisors, so many Republicans who've been active their entire lives and careers, are recognizing this is the moment where we've got to stand together to preserve this great American experiment and make sure that he does not get reelected to office.
The recent revelations about the president's debt, I think, are in particular alarming, owing some $450 million that will come due in his second term, should he be reelected. This is prompting a reexamination of the president's dealings on practically every domestic and foreign issue. If you are that much in debt, that leaves you open to becoming a national security risk. As anyone who's worked in and around the federal government knows, even if you have a few $1,000s in debt, you cannot typically get a security clearance. We have learned via the New York Times that the president is more than $400 million in debt. It's simply a staggering amount of money. So what's your message to voters of both parties and independents, of which there are quite a few in Florida, who are digesting this information and wondering how that has impacted the president's decision making?
Well, that's a great question, and you hit it really right on the head. This is an extraordinary moment. This is an extraordinary amount of money, all of which is completely callable, meaning the debt needs to be resolved in the next couple of years. And for those that maybe aren't following, that means the president of the United States is going to have to come up with hundreds of millions of dollars to pay off this debt that he evidently and clearly does not have in the middle of a second term of his presidency. So it's very clear that some of the actions that the president has taken has raised a lot of eyebrows in his first term, everything from securing patents from China for his family, working with Saudi interests, perhaps taking a peculiar and inexplicable attitude towards Russian influence and influences. And it's I think, becoming very, very clear what is happening here is this president is taking a very different foreign policy tone with those that are open to doing business with him. And while we have struggled, I think, as Americans to understand why enemies of ours that have been very aggressive with the United States interests over the last half century, understanding that he has this extraordinary debt hanging over his head, which must be repaid, starts to come into a clearer picture. So these are his documents. That's what we need to remember and understand. These are his forms that he filed. This is not something from the government. This is not some sort of peculiar analysis. This is not anything other than something signed in his own hand to clearly demonstrate his precarious financial situation. He is not who he says he is. He is not a multi-billionaire business tycoon. He is a man struggling and deeply, deeply in financial debt, and that puts us as Americans in an equally dangerous position, knowing our leader has to come clean with who he owes that money to, and in a very short time frame with very little opportunity to make the money required to pay off this debt.
We should note the president yesterday denounced the New York Times story, said it was inaccurate. Let's go to some calls now for Mike Madrid of the Lincoln Project. 549-2937 to join us. Bob is in Atlantic Beach. Hi, Bob. Good morning.
Good morning. I have been a lifelong Republican and a conservative. I'm a retired chief warrant officer from the military, and I am very frankly taken aghast by the fact that our president chooses to value his money over the American people. I don't understand how we can talk about reelecting a man who is going to destroy the United States. Thank you.
Bob, thank you. Mike Madrid, we are living in a hyper-partisan time, as you well know, as the political director of the Lincoln Project. People who oppose this president have made up their minds. People who like and support this president have made up their minds. That said, your organization, the Lincoln Project, is led by Republicans, and you are speaking to Republicans when you create these ads that have really gone viral across the country in recent weeks. You're speaking to voters like Bob in Atlantic Beach. Why have you made the conscious decision to target your messaging to Republicans?
Well, look, first I want to thank Bob for his courage for standing up and for calling in. He's precisely the person that we are speaking to. All of us as Republicans, and remember this organization was founded by 8 Republican conservatives who have worked for past presidents and past governors and U.S. senators. We're focusing on Republicans because that's what we have spent the bulk of our lives and careers doing. And we know that there are people like Bob out there who have conservative principles, who are lifetime Republicans, who we have been working with in coalition, again, for decades. And the reason why somebody like Bob is concerned and confused about what we're seeing in this country today is precisely because he is a conservative, not despite it. And we need to give them a home, like we have sought, to make sure that we can stand up for what it is that we believe in. It's not that our belief values have changed. We simply are very deeply concerned that that there are still Republicans who would support a president who's clearly running this country into a very dangerous place. So we focus on that because that's what we've been focusing on for our entire careers. We're particularly good at it. And we know that if we keep just a small percentage of Republicans off of Donald Trump and do not support him, that we will be successful in returning this country to normalcy in November.
I know you study poll data closely, and you've spoken in recent days about a softening of support for President Trump among his most reliable constituency, white men without a college degree. That said, I want to get your thoughts about Florida, Mike. We are split almost nearly right down the middle in this state, no surprise, several weeks out from Election Day. There are a number of voter groups in Florida that could make the difference one way or the other, including military veterans like the caller we just heard from, senior citizens, and also Latino voters. What are your thoughts about those voter groups in Florida this election cycle?
That's such a good question because Florida, of course, is going to be Florida, as you just mentioned. It's a little bit peculiar and unique, and in many ways, it serves as a good petri dish of America. You have to really win the support of a lot of very disparate interests, disparate communities, in order to be successful. Florida, in many ways, is 5 or 6 different states, and it's certainly a lot of very important groups. But let me speak to the 3 that you just mentioned very briefly. The first is military families. Most of the polling suggests that Joe Biden will be the first Democrat to win a majority of military support in the history of modern polling. That's extremely significant, and it's obviously tied directly to a couple of issues. The first is the president's refusal to hold Russia accountable for putting bounties on the heads of American soldiers overseas. And the second, of course, was the revelation in Bob Woodward, the Atlantic Monthly article that suggested that the president very clearly has a downward-looking attitude towards those who have served in our country. Cannot fathom why they do not support going and pursuing things like money as opposed to serving our country. And those revelations had a very serious impact with, again, callers like Bob and people who have served our country. The second very important critical demographic is going to be senior citizens, those 65 and older, especially those who have been impacted or concerned about the COVID pandemic and the president's mismanagement of the situation. This group, perhaps more than any other, will be significant in Florida, and we are already seeing a lot of polling data and have since mid-March suggesting that Donald Trump will be the first Republican president to ever not win the senior citizen vote. That's very significant as well, and it's why, in large part, we are seeing the state of Florida as volatile as it has been. It's going to be extremely competitive, as it always is, but we think that there's plenty of opportunities, especially for the number of Republicans like Bob who are leaving, Joe Biden will carry Florida, and this will be a central piece of Biden's roadmap to 270 electoral votes.
You think Joe Biden will win Florida? I mean, Florida's still a toss-up state. It could go either way.
It can go either way. It's very much a battleground state. It's probably the most critical battleground state, and the reason is because while even if Joe Biden loses Florida, we do not think he will, but if he were, he still has about a 50-50 chance with all of the other states that are in the battlefield, as we call battlefield, meaning very competitive states. But if Donald Trump loses Florida, he has a 98% likelihood of losing the presidency. So it's an extremely critical state for both candidates. It's more important for Donald Trump because he's got a smaller path to victory. But most of the polling suggests that we are going to have an extremely high turnout, a record high turnout, actually, for any campaign, any presidential race in the history of the country. And that turnout model bodes extremely well for a Democrat, any generic Democrat, but Joe Biden specifically as we head into the last 30 days of this race.
And how do you see North Florida, the Jacksonville market in particular? Certainly President Trump has a strong base of support in Jacksonville and the collar counties around Duval County. He held a rally here the other night that drew nearly 15,000 supporters. That said, Duval County has been trending more blue in recent years. Both campaigns will need votes in this part of the state. How are you tracking that?
You articulated it very well, again. And look, the reason why the state is trending bluer is we've seen a correlation with college-educated voters moving away from Donald Trump. See, the real split in the Republican Party is not based off of gender. It's not based off of income. It's not based off of geography. There's a very direct correlation between those Republicans that are leaving Donald Trump when you have a college degree. The higher level of your educational attainment, the more likely it is you are to reject Donald Trump and Donald Trumpism. And so what we're seeing, especially in the northern part of the state, is white voters with college degrees leaving Donald Trump in rates that we have never seen with a Republican president before. And that's particularly what's happening in Jackson and Duval County areas.
Lots of calls, meanwhile, for Mike Madrid of the Lincoln Project. Lee is on the north side. Hi, Lee. Go ahead.
Good morning, Melissa. How are you guys?
Okay, thanks.
Good. My question, first of all, I want to thank your guest for the work that he is doing, him and Stephen Smith and George Conway. But my question is simple. If the president all of a sudden gets a bailout from, say, Vladimir Putin, does he face any legal ramifications from that?
You're wondering how the president makes his debtors whole? Is that your question?
Yeah, pretty much. If he got, like I said, bailed out from Putin, does he face any legal ramifications? Is that legal for him to do so as president of the United States?
Okay, thank you for that. You know, the president owes a lot of people money. We don't know if any of that is connected to Vladimir Putin, although certainly there's been a lot of speculation to that effect. But Mike Madrid, getting back to the issue of the president's debt and his tax information, it is hard to know how this is going to end. Because theoretically, the banks that hold the president's debt, if he wins a second term, they would be put into the position of having to foreclose on a sitting president, correct?
That's exactly correct. And again, that's a situation that not only has no other president ever faced before, it's frankly a situation that no one really ever envisioned. It's so outside of the norm. And to come up with that kind of money based off of the president's dwindling asset base, and I say that because that's what the tax records demonstrate, is he's carried forward so many losses for so many years. And his income, of course, has gone down because he is now only earning what he has made as the president of the United States, the salary of the president of the United States, that we don't know how he will make that debt good, which even if it is not a nefarious source, what if it is a traditional bank and not some sort of foreign power, the callability of this debt would require a massive fire sale of the president's assets. So that begs a lot of questions. And again, we don't want to speculate too much, but we do know that it's not good under any scenario. There is no good scenario here for a president of the United States that could be leveraged through any other foreign influence or, frankly, any domestic influence. If he's doing business with a bank or the banking industry, which clearly he does as the president of the United States, and is faced with restructuring an enormous amount of debt, that's not the position you want any elected official negotiating public policy in, specifically if it's the president of the United States.
Let's go to Daryl in St. Augustine. Daryl, go ahead.
Oh, hey, good morning. This is Mark in St. Augustine.
Oh, so sorry. I've got a few St. Augustine callers waiting. Go ahead, Mark.
I just want to make a comment. I have no problem with people wanting to investigate his taxes, and I understand the questions that are raised and all that kind of good stuff. But I do find it kind of, I don't know if you want to say ironic or hypocritical. I wish this kind of investigative reporting would occur when we look at our nation and the debt that we owe to China, and the politicians who I'm sure are going to make hay over this issue in the upcoming weeks here. It just kind of reminds me of a line from the movie Casablanca when the police captain comes in and shuts down Rick's cafe and he's shocked to find gambling is going on there. And at the very same time, the guy walks up to him and says, here's your winnings.
Right, right.
And I just...
Mark, I hear you. I hear you. Okay, Mark, thank you for that. Mike Madrid.
That's such a great question. And again, this is why as conservatives, as fiscal conservatives, we have an enormous problem with the fact that there is gambling happening at Casablanca. Look, the debt, the national debt, is an extremely important issue to all of us as Republicans in this effort. And what we've seen is an explosion of the amount of debt that we are owed to the Chinese specifically, but to foreign governments generally, as we have borrowed and borrowed and borrowed our way through this presidency. Now, Donald Trump isn't the first president to put us in a place of significant debt and owing to other countries. But he is by far the greatest president of the United States. And by greatest, I mean has used the amount of debt to the greatest disadvantage of the country. I don't even know the calculations of how much we actually owe now are just unfathomable. And it doesn't seem like there's any end to it. So even though we do have serious character issues and believe that there is significant damage being done to our Constitution, there are also policy differences like the explosion of debt, which makes us as Republicans all the more committed to making sure that he's defeated in November.
Thank you, Mike Madrid, co-founder and political director of the Lincoln Project. Thanks for appearing. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.
Much more still ahead. Meanwhile, later, the strange things scientists in Florida are doing to mosquitoes, we'll explain. But up next.
Full capacity is probably a much higher risk than I would be comfortable with.
Local physicians react to the full reopening of Florida's restaurants this week. That's after this.
President Trump has attacked his opponent's political record.
Joe Biden has been on the wrong side of history for 47 years.
Biden says four more years of Trump would mean chaos.
You are not safer in Donald Trump's America.
I'm Audie Cornish. Join NPR Tuesday night for special live coverage of the first presidential debate from NPR News.
Tomorrow night at 9, here on WJCT News 89.9.
Well, Florida restaurants are back at full capacity this week on the order of Florida Governor Ron DeSantis. However, physicians and public health experts say this could lead to a new spike in COVID cases. For more on this, I spoke with Dr. Matthew Thompson, the co-founder and chief operating officer of Telescope Health in Jacksonville. Dr. Thompson, thanks for being with us.
Yeah, it's my pleasure.
I want to begin by asking you your reaction to Governor DeSantis' decision to allow restaurants across Florida to operate at full capacity, what is being called phase three of the state's reopening plan. Epidemiologists, public health experts have criticized this move. They think it could lead to an uptick in COVID in the state. What's your take on this?
Yeah, I would have to echo those concerns. I think that full capacity is probably a much higher risk than I would be comfortable with. You know, as we've seen, there are varying degrees of risk that you can assume, and people are just now starting to get out and try to resume some form of normalcy or activities that they did before. And I think that as long as we're doing those in a measure that reduces risk and, you know, prevents unnecessary exposure, and that's okay. But full capacity certainly is maybe snapping back to a time before the pandemic, which we're not even really out of a pandemic yet.
Yeah. Now, the latest CDC report on COVID-19 did note that dining out does pose a significant risk for COVID-19 transmission. That's even if restaurants are doing reduced capacity and other safety guidelines. So what about what the CDC is saying about this?
Yeah, so, you know, and I think it's, you know, for the restaurant industry, I think this is an important, and they made this distinction too, that not all restaurant experiences are the same in risk. And, you know, what I would say is that, and especially after looking at the study, activities that put you in close contact with other people in a poorly ventilated area or with poor circulation is definitely going to put you at a high risk. And you know, for me, for example, I go to Bold Bean every morning. I get a coffee, right? So I'll wear my mask. I'll walk inside. I'll get my coffee. I'll leave. You know, maybe I'll sit outside in a chair, you know, out in a patio situation. But that is very, very different than going to an indoor bar or an area where there's no circulation, no air conditioning, and there's no mask being worn, and people are arm in arm and having a great time. They're not equivalent scenarios, right? And so, you know, unfortunately, the study doesn't distinguish between those two types of situations. And that's really what people need to know, is that, you know, any situation can have varying degrees of risk associated with it.
So what guidance do you have for people out there, given that the governor has essentially told restaurants that they can just do business as usual? Some diners will be thrilled with that, but other people are going to remain cautious. What's your advice to all of us?
Well, right now, you know, if you look at the numbers of, you know, we look at a specific number called an R-naught number, and that's the reproductive value of the virus. And right now we're hovering right at one. And to explain that kind of in simple terms, for every person that's infected, they'll infect another person. And when this pandemic started, we were at three. So that means that we're right at the point. Anything above one is concerning because it will increase the amount of virus. Anything below that is moving in the right direction. So we're just not quite there yet. And I would say that if you're going to go out and be at a restaurant or go be at your kid's softball game or, you know, go to a party or event, that's one decision. But then after you make that decision, you have many, many little decisions on how much risk you're willing to assume. If you're going to go to the restaurant, you can wear the mask when you're walking through the restaurant. You don't have to just say, I'm going to go and pretend like now that I'm doing this, I'm going to be throw all caution to the wind. You know, if you go to a friend's house, you can say, I'm going to stay outside, or I'm not going to share food with other people. There's a million decisions that you can make on a daily basis to reduce your risk. So I think if we can get the public and people to think in those terms, then even as we start to progress forward with being around each other and assuming activities we had before the pandemic, the risk will still be less.
Let's talk about mask wearing. We do know that it really does protect us from the virus. It reduces the transmission of the virus. There is no statewide mask mandate for here in Florida. And Governor DeSantis is saying he would like to see no more penalties for people who are ignoring mask mandates where they do exist. Can you talk a little bit about mask wearing and really what you'd like to see Floridians do as we enter into the fall and winter with this virus.
Sure. I can tell you, wear a mask.
Yeah.
I think that what it comes down to is this is a virus that we know is spread from respiratory droplets, meaning the things that come out of your nose and mouth. And if you're in a situation where you're around others in close proximity, again, to reduce the risk, the most effective way is going to be to wear that mask. And, you know, beyond that, if you have any symptoms at all, you know, this is what I always hear as a physician is, I thought this was allergies, or, you know, I have acid reflux and that's what's causing me to cough. You know, we're still in that time period where we can't make those assumptions. It's not safe. And if you're having any kind of symptoms whatsoever, don't put yourself around others that could be at risk or you could spread the disease to. So wear a mask and be safe.
We're speaking with Dr. Matthew Thompson, the co-founder and COO of Telescope Health. Now, your company, Telescope Health, was the first coronavirus testing resource for the city of Jacksonville. The number of positive cases has declined, but so has the amount of testing for COVID-19. What's the latest on testing for this virus in our area?
Yeah, we've seen testing rates have continued to drop, and I would suspect that those are going to increase as we see, you know, more pockets of areas that have small spikes, such as universities, schools, and as we're opening back up again with these events, it's only natural to assume that we're going to have another spike in cases. And, you know, I think that this is even a more valuable time to be tested. You know, we're moving in a great direction. And as we open things up, it doesn't mean that we should throw all caution to the wind. It means that we should continue to be vigilant so that we continue moving in that direction. And, you know, our rates are still higher than they were at the beginning of March and in mid-March when this pandemic started. So, you know, we have more people walking around in the community who have COVID-19 still, even though it's improving. So there's great resources. I mean, our two sites are City of Jacksonville sponsored. They're free for Duval County residents. There's a number of other resources available out there. So just go get tested if you have a concern. That's my recommendation.
Right. Anything else that can be done, do you think, to have a more widespread testing and contact tracing program for Florida? The lack of that has made it difficult for this state, like so many others, to get a handle on this virus.
Sure. You know, I would say that we're very fortunate to work with great hospital systems like Baptist Health and with City of Jacksonville. And I think that it's a coordinated effort. And sharing of information and resources is the most important piece. And also dealing with misinformation also. I think that the more that we can have public education and the less misinformation that's propagated, the better. And so, you know, I would also say if you have a primary care doctor and you have questions, you should try to make an appointment with that primary care doctor and see them. And if you can't, there are many resources out there. I mean, our telemedicine services through Telescope Health is one where you can see a physician, one of our emergency physicians in the area, and ask any questions you want to. But try to reduce that spread of misinformation. And it's hard right now, but that's why you got to seek out an expert for that.
Sure. And until there's a vaccine, this is the world we're living in. What are your thoughts about the race to develop a vaccine?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, there is some promising changes out there. And I know that several companies have continued to move forward with this. I don't think we're there yet. And I think that, you know, you look at what Fauci has said, and maybe hopefully in the new year we'll have a vaccine ready. But this time, you're right. We're living in a time where the potential and the risk is still there without any obvious near-end resolution of this pandemic.
So as Dr. Thompson said, keep socially distancing, keep washing your hands, keep wearing your masks. Thank you so much. He's Dr. Matthew Thompson, the co-founder and chief operating officer of Telescope Health in Jacksonville. Thanks so much.
Yeah, thanks, Melissa. Bye-bye.
Well, this Thursday, Sunray Cinema is hosting a free drive-in screening of the new film, Us Kids. This is a new documentary covering the youth activism that rose up after the Parkland mass school shooting at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School. Sunray co-owner Shayna David Massett is on the line with details. Hey, Shayna.
Hey, Melissa.
Good to talk to you. Now, this is a drive-in screening. These are popping up all over the country so that we can socially distance but still watch a movie. Tell us about this movie, Us Kids.
So Us Kids, director Kim Snyder made a documentary about a sad situation in Newtown, very similar, and it was really from the grief of parents' perspective. This new film is focusing on Marjorie Stoneman Douglas and the tragedy that happened there, and then something that's not a tragedy at all that arose from that story, which is youth being motivated to change their world in a way that just needs to be seen on the screen.
Right. The kids from Parkland, like David Hogg and many others, have become national figures. They led the March for Our Lives in Washington against gun violence, and they've become very involved in the political process. Two of the students from Parkland will be providing a Zoom intro at this movie event, correct?
We know that the director, Kim Snyder, is involved in the intro, and some of the students may be involved. They may be on the road and working, and the details of this have come together just in these last few weeks, and it's very exciting. We know director Kim Snyder will be introducing as well, though.
Okay, but to be clear, this is a virtual event. People will not be able to come out and meet any of these youth activists in person. Is that right?
That's correct. The Zoom intro is how we're connecting to those activists and, in a safe way, screening the film in an outdoor setting that's a drive-in.
And this is happening actually near WJCT, right in the shadow of the Jaguar Stadium at a place called Tailgaters. It's across from the stadium at 225 Talleyrand Avenue. Basically, this is like an old-fashioned drive-in movie event, right?
Yes and no. Old-fashioned in that typically, we're not watching movies in our cars here in 2020, but brand new, as in the very, very brightest screen, the very, very strongest sound that you can hear with technology that simply wasn't available in, you know, the good old-fashioned drive-in days, nor were documentaries on this topic, I don't think, something that we think about. But this is a new way to reach people, and we're happy to be able to take part in it.
Sure. And these have been happening, these kinds of movie events, throughout 2020 because of the pandemic. What's the experience been like for people that have been coming into these locally and around the country?
Sure. We're close to 20 pop-up drive-in events under our belt throughout the region. We've had them as far as Callahan. We've had several events at this Tailgaters location, and we did a few here in Murray Hill. It is just a response of gratitude to have a place where people can have affordable entertainment for their family, can stay involved in some of the best documentaries that are available to watch during this time of year that we all wondered how these stories were going to be told if our movie theaters weren't open to the public. They're very, very well attended. This screening we hope will be as well, even though it's a free screening and our screenings are typically new releases or repertory product that there is a charge associated per car. But this one is unlike any other we've done before.
And in addition to the Thursday screening at Tailgaters, there's still regular stuff going on at the Sunray Cinema as the reopening slowly rolls out. What's it been like for you as a movie theater? Because you did have to shut down for months, and now you are slowly letting the public back in.
So regular and irregular, you're right. This pandemic was an opportunity for us to look at drive-in screenings in a way that we had not before because our doors were closed to the public for 10 whole weeks. And those screenings, we have 16 of those coming up over the course of October after the Us Kids screening starting on the 2nd with more classic horror movie type films as well as some new releases in the horror genre. Back to regular at the Sunray brick and mortar location, as we're now finding ourselves calling it, is going to be a while. We are at limited capacity, extremely limited capacity in our auditorium. We have a new reservation system that makes it so that there are seat buffers on either side of you if you buy a ticket to the film. There's empty space. We do have some new releases as they're available. The brand new film Tenet, which we were fortunate enough to receive as a 35-millimeter print as well. Those are available for ticket sales to the public, but the movie studios are really changing the schedule that we expected for 2020. You may have heard all kinds of films that were scheduled for release this month, next month, the month after, are being moved to much later in the year, or potentially 2021, or taken off the schedule entirely and going to streaming services. That's changing the face of film exhibition for everybody. We're accustomed to having to make our own way in this industry, and the pop-up screenings are one thing that's come out of that, as well as all of our health security protocols that we have in the theater now, in addition to the social distancing and in addition to requiring guests to wear face coverings when they're in the lobby of the theater. We've got UVC filters in our HVAC system. We've got a virucide disinfecting gun that we use on the entire auditorium. So this is, I would call, the new regular. What's it like? It's never been like anything else, operating a two-screen movie in the 21st century with my other half. It's an extraordinary experience. It feels like a privilege most days. And we are just trying to roll with the punches.
I bet. Now, kudos to you for doing that, like so many other business owners out there. In the meantime, here is the opportunity. This Thursday night, Sunray Cinema is hosting a free drive-in screening of the new documentary, Us Kids. It's the film covering the youth activism that sprung up after the Parkland mass shooting in South Florida. Again, this is 7 p.m. Thursday, October 1st, a free drive-in screening at Tailgaters. They are at 225 Talleyrand Avenue, right across the street from TIAA Bank Field. There is an event page on Facebook, or look at the Sunray Cinema website. Shana David Massett, the co-owner of Sunray Cinema, thanks so much for being with us. We look forward to it.
Thanks for having us.
All right, a quick break. And in a moment, you will not believe what mosquito control scientists are doing to those pesky bugs right here in Florida. We're going to hop down to the Florida Keys and speak with Mosquito Control after this here on First Coast Connect. Don't go away.
President Trump has attacked his opponent's political record.
Joe Biden has been on the wrong side of history for 47 years.
Biden says four more years of Trump would mean chaos.
You are not safer in Donald Trump's America.
I'm Audie Cornish. Join NPR Tuesday night for special live coverage of the first presidential debate from NPR News.
Tomorrow night at 9, here on WJCT News 89.9.
I'm Agata Gardner, and I'm a volunteer on WJCT's Community Advisory Board. I grew up listening to public radio, and my son now is starting to value it. He'll ask follow-up questions that make it clear to me that he gets it, that that's a complicated issue, and I think it is starting in his own little six-year-old mind to make him realize that the world isn't black and white. And I think that WJCT does a really great job in bringing integrity to the news. This is WJCT News 89.9.
The symphony's masterwork season begins with the music of Mozart and Beethoven. The concert opens with music from the opera Idomeneo, which the Chicago Tribune called Mozart's most imposing operatic score. Beethoven's Eighth Symphony has a spirited sense of daring that makes it a uniquely thrilling ride. Join us for Music of the Greats, October 2nd and 3rd in physically distanced Jacobi Symphony Hall. For information and tickets, visit jacksymphony.org.
The Florida Historical Society is presenting a virtual annual meeting and symposium October 9th through 12th I'm Ben Brotmarkle, and coming up on Florida Frontiers, the weekly radio magazine of the Florida Historical Society, we'll talk with Paul Ortiz, one of the outstanding historians participating in the conference. We'll discuss Art Deco advertising and the consolidation of Jacksonville government. That's Florida Frontiers, Monday evening at 6:30 on WJCT News 89.9.
Agatha Christie may have published her debut novel almost 100 years ago, but
people still enjoy the way that Christie winds the clues in and out of the narrative.
I'm Molly Wood. How those beloved books spawned a global enterprise of entertainment. That's next time on Marketplace.
Tonight at 6 on WJCT News 89.9.
How you vote by mail depends on where you live. And this year, 20 states have changed their rules due to the pandemic. What's it like to oversee an election like no other? Meet America's Secretaries of State next time on 1A.
Today, starting at 10 on WJCT News 89.9.
Welcome back. Well, genetically engineered mosquitoes, that's a real thing, and it's happening in Florida. I spoke about it with Chad Huff of the Keys Mosquito Control District. Hey, Chad, good to have you on the show. Thanks for being with us.
Oh, well, thank you very much for having me.
There's been a lot of attention lately about your activity in the Keys. Your mosquito control district is releasing more than 750 million genetically modified mosquitoes in the Florida Keys region. Can you tell us more about this initiative and why you're doing it?
Well, you know, one of the first things I like to point out is that that 750 million figure is really kind of a misnomer in this case. The actual release number has not been determined yet. As part of the process, Florida Keys Mosquito Control District and the vendor, in this case Oxitec, will select a site location for this project. And part of that site location will include a, for lack of a better term, a census, if you will, of what the local population of Aedes aegypti mosquitoes is, and the release will be directly proportional to that. It's important to point out that Aedes aegypti, although a nuisance mosquito and certainly one that vectors a lot of diseases, including dengue fever and others, diseases like Zika, it only makes up about 4% of the mosquito population in the Florida Keys. So that 750 million figure was set forth by the regulators is just kind of a maximum.
Got it.
It's not a barometer.
Okay, but the whole point of this is to combat invasive and disease carrying species of mosquito. Is that right? To tamp down on disease.
Yeah, for ease of understanding, think of it as using a mosquito to control a mosquito. So that's exactly right. This study or this technique has been used elsewhere in the world, most recently in Brazil by Oxitec, and has been wonderfully effective in controlling an invasive Aedes aegypti population.
How does it work?
Well, it's actually pretty simple. What happens under the under this particular method is basically male Aedes aegypti mosquitoes are released out into the wild, and those male mosquitoes have been genetically adjusted or genetically modified, if that's the word you want to use, to pass down a trait that none of their offspring, when they mate with females out in the wild, none of their female offspring make it past the larval stage.
Hmm.
And so what that means is you have a bunch more male Aedes aegypti mosquitoes flying around out there. And then those mosquitoes in turn pass down that same trait for at least one more generation. So what you have is kind of two or three successive generations of male Aedes aegypti mosquitoes breeding with wild females and then passing that trait on to their sons, for
okay.
lack of a better word.
What, and then what would you say to Florida residents who they certainly don't want disease-carrying mosquitoes flying up from the Keys anywhere else in the state? But at the same time, when people hear about genetically modified species, that can sometimes make them uncomfortable. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, I think, you know, as with anything in this day and age, you need to avoid the knee-jerk reaction to subjects that need a little bit of research into before you completely understand, you know, what exactly is going on. That's not a knock on anybody's, you know, perception or what they've heard or anything like that, but there's just a lot to this story that needs to be understood, beginning with Aedes aegypti mosquitoes don't migrate. When they're born, they pretty much live their entire life within a mile of where they were hatched, so they don't spend a lot of their life flying around from place to place looking for unsuspecting people to bite. So they're urban mosquitoes. They're born in and around places where people live because they need containers to hatch their eggs. So they're a container breeder mosquito, and they're basically born and they hatched, and then they're very comfortable living in your front yard or in your backyard or in your pool or any place that they can find a little bit of undisturbed, possibly fetid water that they can breed in.
This will be interesting to watch. This is getting underway early next year, correct?
Unknown. What we're basically saying to the folks that we're communicating with is that the earliest it will take place is 2021. And really, if you're looking at the seasonal cycle of mosquitoes in the Florida Keys, that would be closer to probably summer of 2021, because you would want to try this technology out when you have the most mosquitoes around, and that would generally be in the summer.
The most miserable season for them. Well, thank you for this. It's a fascinating topic. Chad Huff with the Keys Mosquito Control District. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you very much for having me.
And that's our show. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. We'll be back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great week, everybody.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.